Usually the last of the Nobel Prizes to be announced is the Nobel Prize for Economic Sciences. And that prize has gone to three economists, David Card, Joshua Angrist, and Guido Imbens, for their work in the field of natural experiments, which, very simply put, is they look at life as it is happening and make deductions from that. We're joined now by Professor Vimal Ranshod, who is a professor at the School of Economics at the University of Cape Town, also deputy director of the Southern African Labour and Development Research Unit. Prof, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, John. Thanks for having me.
It is a huge pleasure. I was told that you are the person to make this economics ignoramus understand why the work of these three has been rewarded with a Nobel. What's special about it?
It's super special in the sense that what they did, and this is going back to the 80s and mostly in the 90s, they brought about what is called the credibility revolution in empirical economics. And let me try to explain it to you with a problem. Let's say we pass a policy like a minimum wage, and you want to know if the minimum wage caused people to lose their jobs, right? It's a super important policy question. And yet the issue is, how would you be able to answer this question, right? So it's a kind of philosophical and then methodological issue. How do you answer really important policy questions on immigration policy, on labor markets, on minimum wages, on education, on the allocation of resources to allocation? And all of these authors have contributed methodologically to this field, or this kind of umbrella that you're calling natural experiments. We find very particular circumstances in the world which enables us to disentangle the cause and the effect of different things. Now, why is it so hard? Because
I was going to say, surely this is the way everything should be done. What's the point of economic theory? Surely the point of real-world economics is the important one.
Indeed, that's a great point, but it's really hard is the answer. But why is it so hard, though? It's because, let's say I pass a policy, right? Let's make it something everyone understands, the minimum wage.
Yeah.
And then I want to know if it's had an effect on wages, which is the obvious aspect, but I also want to know if people start losing their jobs because firms are no longer willing to hire people at the new wage. And what conventionally I would do is I would say, okay, let's look at what has happened before, what was the wages like before, what's the level of employment before, and then let's look at what's happening after, right?
Yeah.
And that's what we would just consider to be a before-after estimator. It's very intuitive, it's very simple. But the challenge is that, let's say in between, COVID came, or the 2008 financial crisis came, or we were just in a business cycle which happens to be going up or down. At that point, the before-after comparison is contaminated. You get what I'm saying?
Yes.
That there's lots of other things happening in the world simultaneously which confounds our before-after comparison. And so what they've done is develop a whole family of statistical techniques that tries to isolate specifically the effect of that event, which is, in this case, a minimum wage policy. So David Card, for example, in a very famous paper in the early 90s, was a co-author of his who published a lot, Alan Kruger, who has passed on. Otherwise, I'm sure he would have been the fourth name on that list today. But the point is, what they did, they were looking at minimum wages in New Jersey and Pennsylvania, two states in the U.S., and because minimum wage laws in the U.S. affect primarily low-skill and low-wage workers, they looked at fast food restaurants like Burger King and McDonald's.
Yes.
And the one state passed the law and the other state didn't. And so they collected data at these specific franchises that were very close to the border between the two. Like really close, because the borders are invisible borders, right?
Yes.
Their state line is like a province. And so by comparing the outcomes on the one side of the borderline with others that are also close but on the other side, they managed to estimate the effect of that law. by saying, okay, but we know what would have happened in the alternative world by looking at the state that didn't implement this law. And so it's about the comparison with some other group which is not receiving the policy of the law.
And stripping out those variables which have a distorting effect on the...
Precisely. Even if you have a financial crisis, even if you have a pandemic, all those things would probably affect both states equally.
Okay. And I mean, just as a matter of interest, what did the study find about the impact of minimum wages?
Exactly. So here's the important aspect. Like, if you took a survey of economists around 1990, overwhelmingly, they would have told you that minimum wages cause unemployment, and moreover, they cause unemployment specifically amongst the group who the law was supposed to help, right? And so that was conventional wisdom and widely, widely accepted in the economics profession. And by pushing these arguments about let's look at the data and let's identify more precisely how these things actually play out in the real world, the conventional wisdom has changed fundamentally. I mean, now most economists would not say that minimum wages cause unemployment. It would be more of a nuanced, well, sometimes it does and sometimes it doesn't. And even when it does, the effects are not very large empirically.
Because, I mean, that's a very important study for South Africa, where there is a big debate about minimum wages. And there are many people who argue that implementing minimum wages does cause unemployment because people turn to machines. They turn to other ways of doing things rather than humans that they have to pay more than they think those humans are worth.
Right. But even in the South African case, and so here's why perhaps they even more justified with giving them a Nobel, because it shapes the research that we do, and it shapes research all over the world and a whole generation, in fact. So in the South African case, I mean, there's quite a bit of literature by, I've written a little bit, but the biggest contributor is the professor at the DPRU, Harun Bowrat. And the evidence is mixed. In some cases, we do find significant employment losses, but it's very mixed. Some cases, we find almost none.
What you need to understand is then in which cases is it almost inevitable that a job loss will accompany a minimum wage and stay away from a minimum wage in that area of the economy?
Right. So what you're asking is whether we can fine-tune our identification. That's the thing, right? Mm. Because then you can make better and better policies if your policy regime is able to fine-tune things like this. The whole point of the national minimum wage debate, which we had about 5 years ago now, was that we had sectoral determinations, if you recall. South Africa is complicated on labor law because there's sectoral determinations which covered some industries like domestic workers and agricultural workers. And in addition, there's bargaining councils which are industry and sometimes geography specific, which then generates a minimum for their sector. And so South Africa has a very complex intersection, and that was one of the arguments in favor of a national minimum wage, because it replaced all the sectoral determinations and it provided like a lower bound even for bargaining council outcomes.
Thank you very much. I do understand. Well, I understand a lot better than I did 10 minutes ago when we started this conversation. So thank you very much to Professor Vimal Ronschod, who is a professor in the School of Economics at the University of Cape Town, among other things on his business card.